This is Susie Thorpe
on Cambridge 105 Radio.
Right in the studios right now, I've found my lovely guest, Claire Molyneux, lecturer at Anglia Ruskin University and part of the Music Therapy, Cambridge Institute for Music Therapy Research as well. Good morning.
Good morning, Susie.
Very nice to have you here.
Thank you.
Not a lot of guests bring in some beautiful instruments that you brought in as well, part of the music therapy. Just tell us a little bit about yourself, really, how you came in to teach and train music therapy.
So I trained as a music therapist more than 20 years ago, actually on the course at Anglia Ruskin University. And I've been a practicing music therapist for that time, working both in this country and in New Zealand. I've worked a lot with children and young people with special needs and their families. And more recently, I've done work in palliative care and currently on a project with people with dementia. 2 years ago, I came back as a lecturer at Anglia Ruskin University. So that's I'm part of the team on the teaching on the MA music therapy course there.
Now, we were talking earlier that how long has music therapy been going on? Because it's something not a lot of people know about, I don't think now. But it's come to the forefront because it's helping, as you say, patients with dementia. I mean, how long has it been around?
I mean, people have used music for as long as people have existed, and music is part of our lives. As a recognised profession, it's really since the 1970s in this country. So music therapists are registered with the Health and Care Professions Council UK. We're an allied health profession, and music therapists work across a lot of different settings with people across the lifespan. So, you know, I think it is a recognised profession that has certainly had a lot of growth in recent years.
There's lots to talk about. I want to get it in before the news here. But the music, you are in a part of a group here. You're working on a project called Together in Sound, and this is part of the Saffron Hall, a local concert hall in Essex. Do you want to give us a little bit about it? Because I've seen pictures on the website. It's a beautiful concert hall, and it probably really adds to what you're trying to do as well. But just give us a little insight into that.
It's a fantastic project to be part of. So it's a partnership between Saffron Hall and the Cambridge Institute for Music Therapy Research at Anglia Ruskin University. And what we're doing is we're providing music therapy groups to people living with dementia and their carers. So people come along with a companion. It could be a family member, a spouse maybe, or a son or a daughter. And very occasionally we'll have people come along with professional carers. And one of the wonderful things about working with Saffron Hall is that we get to partner with the professional musicians who also come along and perform in that space. So whilst our music therapy groups are closed music therapy groups, we're able to invite the professional musicians in so that our participants who are coming along have an experience of, you know, working with these different musicians. And there's also something in it for the musicians that it's a very different experience for them from being on the stage and performing. They get to be making music closely with other people and using improvisation, which is something that we do in music therapy.
And also get quite a good feedback straight away. They actually get to see how it helps. But just talking, now let's talk about the actual therapy itself. How is it helping people with dementia?
So in lots of ways, really. So the work, what the changes I see in the Together in Sound project are changes to do with relationships, communication, attention. So it might be that we're working with somebody who is ordinarily quite withdrawn and they might not have very much language or use their language very much. And then in the context of a music therapy session, it might be that we're able to engage that person in singing or in playing together with us. Rhythm is a huge motivator. And so it might be that we're actually able to bring somebody out of themselves and develop their attention to others. There's also a real focus on building positive relationships, and that's both between the person with dementia and their carer and with the other people in the groups. And some of the feedback that we've had from people is that coming along to the groups is helping them to build friendships. It's reducing that isolation and the depression that can often come with dementia as well.
Key, isn't it? I think one of the stumbling blocks with anybody with dementia or any mental health issues, that it's nice to be a bit calmer so that you can see the thing differently things outside the world and not just be... I think it's good for everybody, obviously. I mean, I'm very close to... I know lots of people that have been touched by dementia and I haven't used music therapy as yet. How far is it in the system? How many people are helping dementia patients with music therapy?
Well, that's a good question. I don't know the exact answer in terms of numbers, but there are a lot of different projects around the country. So, for example, just across in Bedford, there's an organisation called the Tibbs Foundation who do incredible work with people with dementia. There's up in Manchester, there's the Manchester Camerata, who also have outreach programmes working with music therapists and musicians from their orchestra. So it is something that is happening across the UK. Mm. And of course, in specialised units in hospitals, older people's mental health services, we often find music therapists in those services as well.
Mm. Now, you talked earlier about a commission, a parliamentary commission on dementia music. What's that all about?
So it was a really exciting project, actually, that Helen O'Dell Miller, who is the director of the Research Institute, was part of this commission, which was bringing together a group of people to look at relationship between music and dementia, and really to put some guidelines out there that government and local authorities could start to act on to make access to music and music activities easier for people living with dementia. So we know that it's a really powerful way to connect and to communicate with people and to alleviate some of the distressing symptoms of dementia. So the commission, the first thing they did was to write a report which has got a lot of recommendations in it, and the Utley Foundation, I think, are now tasked with, sort of seeing how those things can be implemented.
I'd like to know a little bit about the sort of music that you think should be played when you're trying to help people with dementia. You've brought some instruments in now. What sort of music then is played?
Well, it's a good question. So, I mean, there's a lot about using familiar music with people with dementia. And we do. We use a lot of familiar songs because it's great to connect with something that you know. But it's also really exciting to connect with new things. And so the instruments I've brought are just an example, really. I mean, they're very beautiful to look at, some of them, and interesting, which means that, you can engage somebody's attention and, sort of hold their interest. So I'm not quite sure how this is going to work, Susie, but if I... this is a big sort of wooden bowl that's got strings across it.
Oh, it's got a great sound.
And so I might use something with like this. It's called a sounding bowl, made by a lovely man called Tobias Kay in Devon. And I might use something like this to improvise with somebody. So I'll put it on their lap, ask them to hold it so they experience the resonance of the music. It'll be both listening and also engaging and participating.
Well, I think we need to hear more about this, Claire, and I'm going to play some music now. We're going to have some news, and I think we should talk more about the instruments that you use, if that's all right with you.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to play Miracles, Coldplay, taking you up to the midday news, and then we're going to hear more from Claire Molyneux about music therapy. I just wanted to reconnect you with Clara Molyneux, lecturer at Cambridge Anglia Ruskin University, part of the Cambridge Institute for Music Therapy Research, talking about music therapy for dementia patients. Nice to have you back again.
Thank you.
Now, you were playing some beautiful sounds then. So can we just go on about, sort of continue with these lovely instruments that you have brought in?
Mm. So I'd shown you the sounding bowl. This other little thing here.
That's really lovely, isn't it? What do you call that?
So that's called a koshi chime.
Wow.
And it's just... It's interesting, actually. A lot of the people that I work with, they will often just hold it and sort of listen to the sound. And I've used it sometimes in a hospice setting where people are, sort of very frail, and actually just that sensation of holding an instrument and being able to hear the sound and connect with it in that way. And the other thing I brought is quite different from these two. So
that looks like a tray upside down, but it's not a tray, is it?
No. So
sounds like the sea.
Yeah, so this is called an ocean drum.
Right.
And basically it's a drum with a skin on the top and a skin on the bottom and filled with ball bearings. And it's sort of, this one's quite brightly patterned with fish inside it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a fantastic instrument to use. Just put it down. Sorry, it's very noisy. It's a fantastic instrument to use for all sorts of reasons, actually. Developing motor skills and control and attention, and also using it to develop things like shared attention. So a lot of the work I've done with children with autism, it might be a really good instrument where the two of us are looking at the same instrument together and, you know, manipulating and playing it with it together, so we can begin to develop that shared attention and reciprocity in play, which is so important for people with autism.
And you mentioned earlier that it's not only for patients who suffer from dementia, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's and autism. I'm sure there are lots as well, but for the carers too. Are you trying to train the carers to sort of communicate with their loved ones? Is that part of it?
So in the Together in Sound project, yes, there's certainly an aspect where it's not, we don't train them in a sort of very structured way, but I think it's just about showing some different ways of being together. And certainly the feedback that we've had from carers is that they start to use music a lot more at home. They're, you know, turning the radio on or perhaps choosing what to listen to. Even one lovely example where they were beginning to use music to help with everyday activities. And that's something that I've heard actually a lot across my career as a music therapist. So working with families, parents might start to say, oh, well, now we use this song to help, you know, brush our teeth in the morning or to help get in the car or to help put shoelaces on or, you know, things like that. Mm. So those are the benefits that we're not perhaps addressing directly in the music therapy session, but it's something that happens as a result of involving carers and parents and other people in the music therapy. And sometimes the work that we will do will then be targeted around, well, actually, here are some ideas you can use at home.
Yeah, it seems a really obvious thing talking to you how music helps everyone. We're on a radio station, we play music, it's very uplifting, we want to play music that's uplifting, it makes us feel good. We obviously listen also to sad music because that depends on what mood we're in or where we've just come from, it's part of film. But it's an obvious thing to do, isn't it? And yet it's only started in the 70s, the actual music therapy, hasn't it?
Mm.
And yet we listen to it from the word dot. We probably listen to music when we're in our mum's wombs. And
yes.
But it's a So for me, it's so obvious and yet so new.
Yeah. And so it's interesting in my role as a music therapist, one of the things to think about is, you know, sort of what's different about what we might do in a music therapy session, or how are we training our trainees on the MA music therapy course to use music clinically. And, you know, so what's different from saying to somebody, oh, well, here you go, play this song 10 times a week or whatever. So the decisions that we're making as therapists, we're really focusing on the relationship that we have with the person and using that to try and support change. And so the musical decisions that we make will be based around knowing what the goals and the aims are of the work. So if we're working with somebody to try and develop communication, then we will be thinking about how we're making music together with them to develop that. If it's more about a physical goal or developing speech and language or creating opportunities for emotional expression, then we'll be gearing what we do towards supporting those goals.
And have you seen huge improvements? I know that there's always the slight, any improvement is a fantastic way forward, isn't it? But have you seen something so magical that you want to tell us about?
There are so many, actually, Susie, that I think it's quite hard to choose. And sometimes the magical moments are not the most dramatic. Sometimes they are the really sort of subtle moments when, you know, a child with autism, for example, returns a gaze, you know, actually looks at you in response to you calling their name or in response to making music together. Sometimes it's, you know, for me in the Together in Sound groups, it's the person who's been quiet throughout the whole session suddenly joining in with a song that we sing at the end and singing at the top of their voice.
Yeah. And does it help people with mutism as well? Is there sort of a moment where people have stopped talking for some sort of shock moment or been through a traumatic time? Do they treat that as well?
They do. And actually, there's a music therapist who there's been a program actually fairly recently about music therapy and working with people who are selectively mute. Yeah, I'd have to look that up to give you a little bit more information.
That's okay, but it is obviously a very broad thing. It's been a pleasure talking to you today. I must take some pictures of these amazing instruments that you've brought in, that you've carried from your car. So thank you very much indeed, Claire Molyneux.
Thank you, Susie.